we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Market Raisin Mail, read by Peter Donaldson.
Members of the Ragsby Swimming Club can hire the pool for birthdays and other special occasions for only £35. The lifeguard will be thrown in for free.
And our thanks to Peter Threlfall for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Susan Kalman. And opposite them on my left, Phil Jupiters and Andy Hamilton. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, which minor drama has been a major success?
Well...
Just thinking how inappropriate that music was, really.
It's victory to the miners time. And some people are trying to put it down. Let's face it, it is a massively good news story. And the function of broadcast news is entertainment for brainy people. That's what it's for. And some people say, oh, it's turned into a soap opera. Well, it has. But if so, it's a soap opera I like. Because I'd rather have a character saying, Soy libre, gracias, María, Madre de Dios, than, it's not your baby. You know? And it's a good week because it was Thatcher's 158th birthday and she's bewildered to find the whole world is cheering on the miners. And that the leader of Chile is no longer her great friend and protégé, Augusto Pinochet, the mass-murdering torturer. Most of whose supporters now support the new president, Sebastián Piñera.
There's Piñera? I thought that was one of those stuffed donkeys Mexicans hit and sweets fall out. It's not the...
Sadly not. He's the president of Chile. Oh. But if there's a revolution, he might be hung up at a children's party and beaten with sticks.
I'm actually appalled that we've missed out on the chance, perhaps the greatest global series of practical jokes. 33 blokes coming out. 33 opportunities to play some of the greatest pranks in the history of the world. Bloke number one comes out. When he comes out of the tube, nothing but chickens everywhere. He's arrived at Planet of the Chickens. Bloke number two comes out. Everybody has got a hook for a hand. Bloke number three comes out. Nothing but Muppets everywhere. I think we've robbed the world of one of its great prank opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, it is a heartwarming story, but the newspapers will get tired of that angle pretty quickly.
Do you think they'll start having a pop-up?
Yeah, a few weeks from now, the horrible stuff will start to come out. So there'll be stories about conflict and betrayal, and it'll be revealed that there are actually 37 miners, but they ate four of them. But my favourite story was the mutineers. Did you see that one?
No.
It was early in the week. There were rumours of five mutineers, right? They'd been trapped down there 17 days, pretty scary, and then the rescuers broke through. And it seems that there were five blokes who, when the rescuers got in contact, said, no, thank you, we'll find our own way out. Yeah, no, we know you've gone to a lot of trouble.
Yeah, no,
thanks.
Yeah.
But no, Jose's got a spoon, haven't you, Jose?
Wouldn't it be great if one of them came out and he went, hi-ho?
The second one came out. His first question was, how's the dog? But you just think... You know, you've got a wife and kids. It wouldn't be your first question, would it?
I think you probably lose your conversational skills when you've been trapped down a mine for 2.5
hours.
They all came out. They all got a nice pair of free sunglasses and an iPod.
And everything was fine.
Yeah. I mean, they've been offered a holiday. The Greek mining industry apparently has offered them all an all-expenses-paid holiday to Greece to look at a mine. I'd probably say no, I think.
33 Chilean miners have been saved after a 69-day ordeal. Their rescue sparked scenes of joyous celebration around the world. They were trapped half a mile underground. Like Nick Clegg's conscience. Oh, at least they found the miners. The BBC spent £100,000 covering the good news story, a cost that means they may be forced to reduce their coverage of the Davos World Economic Forum. Damn, I'd already set the video. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, why might an undergraduate row cost the coalition dearly?
This is a case of the gentleman very much turning it would appear. It's about the Liberal Democrats, who prior to the election in their manifesto said that they were entirely against tuition fees, absolutely against tuition fees. They were going to fight on the beaches against tuition fees. And then, it's no feasible anymore. Sorry, we're going to do it. It's kind of like their manifesto was written on an Etch-a-Sketch, and they just went, So universities can charge up to £12,000 per year for a student to study.
But brave Vince Cable has stepped in and said £7,000 and no more.
I know, and that's your lot. Yes, I felt very reassured by that. I mean, I think for a lot of school leavers, the only option that they're going to have is set up their own universities. I think that'll be, you know, Susan's University. You can get an honours degree in the television programme Casualty. £12,000. Thanks very much.
The Liberals are just abandoning everything and saying, well, now that we've seen the books, and that's their answer to everything, well, if it weren't for the mess that your party had left us in, we wouldn't have to have a hereditary House of Lords, military government and the waterboarding of people with sandals. Vince Cable has, he's just got that belligerence. He never had that. He used to be quite charming. He's got the anger of a man who knows he's wrong. It's like when you're responsible for the house burning down and you say, yeah, well, I wouldn't have left the iron on if I hadn't to iron my trousers to go to a wedding of someone I only met through you.
I blame Labour. What's really annoying, the real crime of the Brown-Blair legacy is because they've left the deficit, they've left the perfect alibi for the Tories, because they can now dismantle the public services, which is what they've wanted to do for years, but now they can do it with that rather mournful, sorrowful shrug of, oh, well, it's the deficit, you see. I mean, I'm going to use that from now on, you know. I might have accidentally shagged your sister, but it's the deficit, you know what? we got to live in the real world, you know.
It's tough, because, I mean, Ming Campbell, is, I think it's the first time he's turned against his own party since... Well, he voted troops out of the Crimea in 1855, but I think...
At a personal level, the really disgraceful thing is that, you know, my 15-year-old daughter, because of all this, will probably have to go through her university years sober. The other thing is, we're going to be sending a generation out into the world. They're going to be middle-aged. That's what's going to happen. They're going to have a mortgage. It's ridiculous.
Well, they're never going to be able to buy a house. They're never going to be able to pay off their debts. And so they're never going to leave home. It's a nightmare.
I quite like that, where they say that as long as they don't earn more than £21,000 a year, they don't have to repay that debt. So we're just going to have generations of incredibly erudite McDonald's workers.
Would one like to supersize that, sir? Ma.
Because if your phone breaks down and you phone up a call centre, what you want is someone with a philosophy degree to really talk about the issues involved with why the phone doesn't want to work. So I think it'd be lovely.
The Coalition is heading for its first major rift over university tuition fees, which could more than double to £7,000 a year, after the Lib Dems reneged on a pre-election promise to oppose any increase. This is the first difference of opinion between the Coalition partners since Vince Cable lost the job of Chancellor to George Osborne in a nail-biting game of Connect Four. 2 points to Susan. Phil, who has decided that quangos are a no-go?
It's Bonfire of the Quangos. They've got rid of 170-odd quangos, I
92.
Think. 92. Good Lord, that's even 20 more than I thought. there's been a lot of talk this week about the government doing this as a measure to save money, but the government are saying, no, it's all about the accountability of these organisations. Basically, they've just gone through this list of quangos, which people really don't like, because they're called quangos. That's basically it, because it's just got this name and it's an easy bête noire of the media. Ah, the quango, the quasi-autonomous non-government organisation, the quango.
Does so sound people... like some creature in Australia that'd have your arm off in the outback.
Yeah.
They're scrapping all these things like the decentralisation watchdog and the big society quango, everything that does any use, the money-saving quango. They're cutting them all. They've cut the one, what's it, the human embryology and OFTOS, that one. But anything that's got a useful function, they're getting rid of.
But that human fertilisation and embryology authority, that's appalling. I mean, that means nobody's going to have authority over human fertilisation. It'll all just be willy-nilly. It'll be... That's an unfortunate choice. But there are some odd ones. The Competition Commission will merge with the Office of Fair Trading, which, you know, seems a tiny bit anti-competitive.
They're going to break up the Monopolies Commission.
They should do. And Liam Burns asked if the 20 new quangos promised in the Tory manifesto will be put on ice. What a fantastic show for the Christmas season.
Some of the quangos that they're getting rid of, I mean, you can see the point of some of them. It was amazing. One of them was, I think it was the Zoo Quorum, I don't know, and there was one which was the Department for Advisement on Wine, which I think was them going, which wine should we have for lunch?
Are you sure it was wine to drink and it wasn't just, oh, this government's really annoying?
Is the Zoo Quorum that it has to be a zoo has to have a sufficient number of animals or it doesn't count as a zoo?
Yeah.
Because if it's... I went to a zoo and there was just a dog there. It was a shih tzu.
Okay, well, if I've got this idea, right, they should cut all the quangos apart from just one, right? And the last one will be a fact-finding group examining the environmental impact of the Eiffel Tower, and it would be the last quango in Paris. It went with the shih tzu. As part of the government's spending review, the coalition has announced plans to review all quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisations, or quangos. 192 quangos have been abolished, 118 merged, and 171 substantially reformed. The captain of the Titanic said he was delighted with the new arrangement of the deck chairs. Shadow Cabinet Officer Minister Liam Byrne accused the government of being desperate for headlines. They're that desperate, they should have gone down a mine. 2 points to the lovely Phil. Andy, who didn't mind his first PMs and Qs?
Who didn't mind his first?
Yes, who didn't mind his first PMs and Qs? It was his first. His it was first. PMQs. It's rather clever. Anyway.
Is it in the Prime Minister? Thingamy Miliband.
That's it, David Miliband.
Yeah. Not David Miliband, but the other one.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
What did he do?
It was his first... It was his first Prime Minister's question.
And
time.
They let him do it all on his own.
They did.
Oh, that's a lovely rite of passage, isn't it?
Although he did have stabilisers on his ankles. They're referring to him as the panda. Now, I'm not sure if it's because he doesn't have sex offering or he's endangered. But one of the pieces said, this panda's got claws. Right. Like he's some kind of furry ninja that suddenly leapt out and started, you know...
Like Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda.
He did quite well, though, because he's got this weird blink that takes forever. So it's quite scary. It looks like he's gone into slow motion, like a martial arts film. He blinks really... And whereas the Tories are all sort of jittering, trying to do jokes like, he's not red, he's brown! As though they're channelling Heseltine, who used to do jokes like... Oh, the right honourable gentleman's name is Foot, and one might say that the opposition have put their foot in it. And, Clegg looked so weird. He's starting to look like he knows he's a bad person. He's running through his mind the conversation that he's going to have with his grandchildren in years to come. And they say, so, Grandfather, they did make you join the coalition. I mean, they threatened you with torture, didn't they? Well, not really.
After appointing his shadow cabinet at the weekend, Ed Miliband went on to face David Cameron during his debut performance at Prime Minister's Question. Labour MPs seemed surprised that Ed had performed so well. Almost as surprised as when they discovered they'd elected him leader. I get to give you 1 point there, Andy. I don't think the two was...
No, I don't want charity. It's fine.
So no points to Andy there. At the end of round one, the scores are Phil and Andy have got 3 points, but Susan and Jeremy are in the lead with 4. We start round two with a cutting from the Florida Daily News.
Health officials in Hillsborough County warned of an outbreak of mosquito-borne illnesses. To reduce the risk of being bitten by mosquitoes, the Department of Health recommends that people should attempt to avoid being bitten by mosquitoes.
Thanks to Alan Kane for sending us that. Jeremy, whose policing is fair game?
The Babylon are going to be instructed by gamekeepers. So that they know how to have sex with the lady of the house. because, you see, since Heartbeat was abolished by the Beeching Report, coppers have all lived in town, and so their townies, they don't understand the ways of the countryside. And so they keep getting rung up by ramblers who are also from towns and exercise a right to roam. They go into the countryside and they ring the police and say, there's maniacs with guns out here. And the police all do scramble, 999, rush out into the countryside, then realise that the countryside is supposed to be populated by maniacs with guns. That's a countryside pursuit. Anything weird and violent in the countryside is a traditional sport. You know, you say, that's a horrible thing. Oh, no, we've been doing this for centuries. Yes, battering fawns to death with a pool cue has been a country pursuit for years. And fawns enjoy it, and it's more humane than gassing them. And don't go moving to the country, because people leave the towns. Oh, let's go and live in the countryside. You'll be much safer there. No, don't, no. There's less stabbing, more smothering. Go don't go out there.
So how's this training going to work? Are they going to be showing them, you know, the sort of, I don't know, types of tweed?
Well, they are apparently going to say this is what a deerstalker looks like.
But the clothing will matter, because you want to distinguish between a genuine grouse shooter and a disorientated Chris Eubank. I mean, there would be...
One of the examples they used of to complain about police ignorance about the ways of the countryside, I rather like the sound of, because they said that the Hunt were out drag hunting, which was chasing drag queens across the country, I don't know. And apparently a policeman stopped them and pointed at the pack and said, shouldn't they all be on leads? Which actually, as someone who sometimes feels a little bit hostile to dog owners, the part of me thinks that they should all be on one of those big, long, bungee leads.
Oh, I think they should bring some of those sports into London. I think it'd be absolutely fantastic to have fox hunting through Peckham. I think it would be terrible.
I quite like the idea of the police, you know, that have been in rural communities coming back with some of the great ideas, and you have burglar beaters, people going through rough neighbourhoods, banging pots and pans.
You wouldn't tangle with the urban fox, though, because they're hard now. Foxes are streetwise. The ones in the countryside are all a bit dim. All right, my lover. Oh, look, beagles. Oh, hello, hello there. You know, but the ones... They're tasty, South London foxes. If the Hunt ventured into Streatham, foxes would all turn around and say, want some, do ya?
It's not just foxes. In my street, I don't know it's Glasgow, but I didn't expect this. There's a pack of feral wild rabbits that chase... Seriously?
Of course
seriously.
There are, Susan, yeah.
I was out in the street the other morning. See, I'm not. I wasn't drunk. I swear. I was out in the street quite early one morning, and they pushed past me. Quite roughly, I thought. This family of feral rabbits, and then they made a rude gesture, and off they went.
One of them say he was late for a very important day.
I do sympathise with the police, because if you see someone with a gun, it's quite hard to know the difference between a normal person with a gun and a psychopath. Because I was on a train going into Newcastle, and I was just looking idly out the window at the houses flashing past, and in one of these gardens was a man with a rifle. And the train was travelling quite fast, so there was a bit of a double take where I thought, that man was holding a rifle. And then I got to the station, I thought, I wonder if I should mention that. There's a man in the garden. And to my shame, really, I didn't mention it because I had two thoughts. One was, oh, it was probably just an innocent thing. And the second one was, no, because if I do, they'll surround his house with 30 police cars and they'll stop all trains to Newcastle. And I thought that would be a disservice to my fellow rail travellers. So four people are dead now, mind. But
yes, Andy did do that in 1963, and it was the back garden of Lee Harvey Oswald.
The National Gamekeepers Association will be giving free talks to police forces to teach them about country sports and hopefully prevent legal shooting parties being mistakenly arrested. Some country residents complain that police are unwilling to intervene in serious matters like the illegal hunting of deer, even when this means that deer are left orphaned and have to be raised by a likeable rabbit sidekick. Not from Glasgow.
I thought legal shooting parties were the police.
2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who has unzipped their jeans in public?
This is a new website. 11 scientists and one lawyer have decided, in order to counteract the public's reticence to publishing genetic information, is that they've decided to publish their information on a website called Genome Unzipped, which sounds like the weirdest fetish site for gnomes anyone's ever come across. And they called themselves the DNA Dozen, which I love, because that's the sequel we never saw to the Dirty Dozen straight to video.
The world's least scary motorcycle
the
gang.
DNA Dozen. I can understand the reticence. I personally don't have so much as a supermarket loyalty card, because that's how they track you.
What, you track your DNA through the supermarket loyalty card?
That's how supermarkets know what you're doing and stuff, and then they know what you want, and then they say, oh, would you like this chocolate? And you go, no, but I do now. And they get inside your head, and before you know it, you're home, and you've bought no toilet roll, you've just got chocolate.
I was in the supermarket the other day, and the woman said, do you have a loyalty card? And I said, no, and she said, why not? I said, because I'm disloyal.
That in coffee shops as well, and they reel you in and they say, well, you get a stamp and then you get a free coffee. You're like, well, I don't feel. And they go, do you have one? And you go, no. And they say, do you want one? And you say, no. And they look at you like,
yeah, they get you hooked, and then you get to a point where you've got no money, and you go begging to them and say, just a cappuccino to get the monkey off my back, and then they end up pimping you out. Yeah. That's what happens.
How did we get from DNA to Costa Coffee loyalty cards?
I can understand the thing about the British public, which I genuinely adore, is that everyone gets so upset and say, I'm not putting my DNA on a website, and then you'll know all about me, and I'll get fired from my job because you'll realise that I have bad DNA. But the British public are genuinely happy to put up photographs on Facebook of themselves half-naked riding a policeman whilst drinking a shot.
If anyone's going to get DNA all over my computer, it's going to be me.
There are a few gene stories this week. Did you see the one about whether you're pear-shaped or you're apple-shaped?
No.
Rather frightening sentence in it. It said, we're fascinated by the subject of where fat settles, which I found deeply bothering because it raised the prospect of sort of migratory decision-making facts.
What are the two shapes?
Pear-shaped.
Yeah.
And apple-shaped.
What if you're the shape of a duvet full of meat?
We need more than these 12 scientists to contribute. I mean, at the moment, the entire database must be bald men with bushy eyebrows.
Jesus only had 12 disciples. managed to recruit another 5,000 by making tiny fish sandwiches to give away.
So maybe instead of a website, they need to have a running buffet.
I hate buffet.
You hate buffet?
I don't like anything where you don't use a knife and fork. Now, I don't mean anything. I mean, obviously there are some things in life you can do without a knife.
Just
be
slightly.
Not completely strange. Now,
casualty would be awash with people with puncture wounds.
I was only talking about first date. Now, 12 genetic scientists have become the first people to contribute their DNA to the Genomes Unzipped project in order to challenge the view that the information is too sensitive to share. The leader of the group said, we want to show that genetic science need not be frightening, before returning to his underground lab to do some more work on the creature. 2 points to Susan. Phil, why is a hangdog's bowl half empty?
I will take the laugh from my teammate here that he knows what this story is about.
Yeah.
There's been some research into dogs this week. Oh, that they get separation anxiety.
Yeah. What we haven't understood is that the problem for a dog is because they're not strong on kind of cognitive connection, they think that when you go out the door, you're never coming back. Or certainly dogs that are anxious can't put together the fact that you're coming back, which explains why dogs greet you. Because it is that. Oh, it's him, he's back! He's come back! Oh, thank you so much. And there was this study of dog depression, which said that some dogs are all right because they're optimists. And I thought, what, you know, how would that manifest itself? An optimistic dog is presumably a dog who hunts the sofa thinking, well, you never know. This might be a very large, deformed dog.
It's a toilet half full kind of a dog, isn't it?
They are apparently either pessimists or optimists.
But the way that they found out was ridiculous. What they did was they put dog bowls. So one day they put the full one on one side and the empty one on the other side, and then they would switch them round and they would move them round. And if the dog went to the bowl that they thought had food in it, there was an optimist. Look, if you came into my kitchen and moved around my pot noodles, I'd be quite depressed as well.
Imagine That's it made me look again at my dog. I thought my dog was really clever, because I thought he was saying sausages, but in fact he was saying, what's the point?
Lassie would be terrible if you had pessimistic dogs. Wouldn't it? Yeah. What's that, Lassie? Chilean miners are trapped down a mine? What? You don't think they're going to make it? Oh. Oh, never mind then.
You see Lassie watching some small child sweeping down the river, and he's just going, well, we've all got to go sometime. Dogs can be optimists or pessimists, according to a study at Bristol University. There'd be nothing worse than coming home to the golden retriever and he's overdosed on worming tablets. The cat's sitting there saying, I think it's a cry for help.
Yeah, yeah. Also, if you see a dog reading Sylvia Plath poetry, that's a really bad...
2 points to Phil. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings that the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Joan Springett of Chester, and it's from the Chester Chronicle. Chester Crown Court heard Metcalfe used the cash to fund a hedonistic lifestyle, including gambling, alcohol, a series of girlfriends in Thailand, and following Middlesbrough Football Club.
Ms. Kelman.
This is a clipping from the Beacon Journal, and I think you'll agree it asks more questions than it answers. Okay, so a 38-year-old Cole Avenue man reported that his home was invaded on September the 9th. The man said that he was sitting home alone watching a pornographic movie when a man came down into the basement holding a gun and started to videotape him. The man said that before he left, the intruder fed his dog some mushrooms and the dog died.
It's always a way, isn't it? Always a way.
Mr. Jupiter's.
Many thanks to Stuart Todd for sending me this cutting from the Oban Times. A man dressed as Superman, who punched another man on the head, has admitted the assault at Fort William Sheriff Court. Procurator Fiscal Alison Wiley said, the accused and the victim went around to an alleyway to fight, followed by a friend of the accused who was dressed as Batman. They started fighting, but quite quickly the accused got the better of the victim, and whilst Batman looked on, Superman carried out the assault.
Mr. Hamilton.
Well, this was sent in by the beautifully named Christina Christmas, and it's from the Biggleswade Chronicle, and I love it for its puzzlingness. It's from the Cricket Report. Hatley played Eltisley on Sunday and were beaten for the first time this season. Hatley were missing Russ Nicholson, who was preparing for the Tour de France by having altitude training in Holland.
Let's take a look at the final score. Phil and Andy have got 7 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Susan with 8. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sent in by Max Ross.
A motorist came face to face with another car on a single-track road and threatened to run over the driver's mother. The defence said the accused had been worried that it was nearing tea time and the cornettos on her back seat were melting.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Susan Kalman, Phil Jupiter and Andy Hamilton. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chair's script is written by Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark and Rodri Crooks, with additional material by James Kettle. The producer was Sam Bryant.